Marty Morrissey, good morning to you. Welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Niall. Lovely. I'm really delighted to be on your programme.
Well, Marty is with us this morning to talk about his new book, called, appropriately enough, It's Marty, which is the story of his mostly, but unexclusively, sporting life. And, you know, I was just thinking, Marty, reading some of the reviews referring to you as a national treasure. Do you ever reflect on the national treasure handle when you're travelling up and down the highways and byways of Ireland going to and from matches?
Absolutely not. And I'm not, anyway. And I never think of myself, but it's a lovely compliment. But no, not at all. I just go and do my job as good as I can. But no, I mean, look, the book was never on my to-do list, Niall.
Yeah.
I wasn't on the bucket list at all.
Nor are you retiring. It's not as if you're looking.
Oh, no, not at all. Oh, yeah. God, no. The crack is too good, for God's sake. And thanks be to God, the RTE still want me to do what I'm doing. But it was just various publishers had asked me, and I said no, mainly because I was too lazy. My excuse was also I was too busy. But then Penguin Books came to me last February, 12 months, and said, would you do it? I said no, I gave the same excuse. And then, of course, in March, we got COVID.
Yeah.
And it changed things. I still didn't agree to do it until around September because I thought, okay, look, it's probably the championship won't be happening. I won't be busy. And then, of course, the championship did happen. So I started October, November, December was busy with the championship. So I only started the book in January and I finished it in September, missing every deadline along the way, 1st of March, 1st of April, 1st of May. But I got there. But Penguin were good. They kept taking tranches of chapters that I was doing. But it's a bit intimidating now, Niall, I have to say, because...
Yeah. Well, it's not like you to be missing deadlines now, Marty, I have to say.
You clearly don't know me. You know that
why is it intimidating? Is it just the discipline involved in writing a book?
Yes, and when you look at the blank screen, as I did, because I was down at home, obviously, in West Clare for Christmas, and you look at the blank screen and you say, why in the name of God did I agree to do this? This is ridiculous. I will not... And the publisher, Michael McLaughlin, wanted 80,000 words. When I was doing my master's in Galway, I didn't even do 80,000. It was 20,000, and it was a struggle. So this was a bit intimidating. But it's funny how the human brain works. Mm. You begin to remember things, you know, from my childhood days in New York to coming back when my father bought a pub in West Clare,
yeah.
To my grandparents, who were very, very poor and had a farm that was poor land, but my grandfather loved it. A bit like Bull McCabe and John B. Keynes. But thanks to God, he didn't murder anybody. But Paddy Morrissey loved his land. And my father didn't really have that love and affection. And it was typical of Irish Ireland at the time, in the sense that when my father met my mother in Cork and they headed to America, my grandfather didn't talk to my father for about 2 years.
Because he immigrated?
Because he immigrated and left the land. And he thought it was an appalling act. And I think, if I was to be honest, I think probably my arrival on the scene, because my parents were married 4 years before my mother became pregnant. Mm. And I think as I was very young when my grandparents died. But of course, being a kid in New York and coming home and having horses and cows and out in the land with my father, my grandfather doing the hay, I just remember it with a great love and affection. It gave me a love of the land, which I don't have, but I mean, I still love it. And, but yeah, I think my arrival broke the ice between the two of them.
Well, that's interesting. And did your love of Gaelic games, did that come from your youth in the Bronx in New York? And you spoke before about having a memory of your dad trying to tune in the aerial to hear me all I hear is commentary.
That's quite true. You see, I was kind of a little bit mixed up, I suppose, when I look back. Because I went to school in St. Anne's in Bainbridge Avenue in the Bronx. And that culture was you swore your allegiance to the American flag every single morning, rain, hail, sleet or snow, and you played basketball and baseball Monday to Friday. And then my father, my mother, the two of them would bring, particularly my father, bring me to Gaelic Park on a Sunday playing football and hurling. And so like most kids, you'd play at halftime on the pitch or whatever. It was more of a sand dune than a pitch at the time.
It was, still is.
So it was kind of that, plus coming home on holidays and making friends at home and with the neighbours, I suppose, gave me the love of Gaelic games. I always had a love of football and hurling in particular. Mm. More so, I found baseball awful boring. And I did love basketball, and I still love basketball to this day. But for me, you couldn't beat football and hurling. It was much more involved.
But that being said, you have vivid, well, of course you have vivid memories of growing up in New York as a child, and you enjoyed that, and you enjoyed living in America. You wanted to be Jackie Gleason from The Honeymooners, did you not? You wanted to be a bus driver at one stage.
I did. We had a cousin, my mother's side, Jerry McAuliffe, and he was a bus driver in Manhattan. And I used to hop on the bus. All buses in New York were single-decker, but they used to make lovely sounds. So when the doors, and I'd always sit on the right-hand side, the driver would be on the left, opposite to here, and sit with the door. When the doors are open, we'd go and make a lovely sound. And I used to pretend then, when I go home with a plate, that I was a bus driver. And then I graduated to wanting to be a priest. Yeah. I think it was being an only child. I think it was center of attention nonsense. But anyway, I threw a towel over my shoulder, and Marietta Biscuit was a host. And I imagined in my own world that I was a priest. But then I discovered Girls Night, and I gave up the priesthood at the age of about 8.
Oh, too much information there. Too much information. But moving from, leaving the early vocation for the priesthood aside and moving from New York to, as you say, West Clare, back to the homestead, that must have been some upheaval for you as a young child, Martin.
Like, living in the Bronx is like living in any suburb, in any town in Ireland. It's not, Manhattan is where the Big Apple really is, and Times Square. Or if you're living in a suburb, it is like any other suburb. But it is still different because you have access to so many different things. But I suppose I was only a child, so I wasn't allowed to go anywhere without one of them being with me, one of my parents.
Yeah.
Or it was on a school thing or whatever it was. But it was, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment, and we were on the fourth floor, surrounded by buildings. So when you look out your bedroom window, when you turn off the light or whatever, I remember loads of lights being around. When we bought the pub in Quilty in West Clare, there was a light that was shaking all the time because we were literally on the Wild Atlantic Way. We were on the Atlantic Ocean across the road from the bar.
Yeah.
Was the Atlantic Ocean, and the only light you'd see every 13 seconds was the lighthouse on the Aran Islands. So it was a dramatic change, but it was primarily sport and football and hurling, obviously, when I went to school in Flannans and Innes, that broke down the barriers. Because when I was there, when I went to school in New York, I didn't realize it until I read a piece. I wrote it in the book Mr. O'Mara asked me to read, and all the lads started laughing. Now, I knew none of them. And they were all primarily Ennis lads or from East Clare, a boarding school, 800-900 lads. And when I started reading, I seemingly had an American accent. So they called me the Yank for a little while until I started playing football. And then I was getting on the Flannans football team and all that.
Yeah.
And it broke down. And slowly but surely, obviously, must have lost my accent. But yeah. Marty became normal then.
And you were no mean footballer or hurler, indeed, in your day. But your career in RTE, Martin, is well documented. It didn't begin in RTE, or it didn't begin in Clare FM. It began in the back of a tractor and trailer.
It did. Doing
a voiceover for a home-produced video. Wasn't that the case?
Yeah, we got into the county football final. My own club, Kilmurry Brickham, we were playing Milltown Malbay. We'll be our great rivals up the road, neighbouring parish. And I had just graduated, and I was teaching in the parish of Milltown Malbay. So the local postman, post office man, Patrick Galvin, said to me, will you do a commentary on the video? VHS. This sounds like the dark ages now.
Yeah.
So I said, no, not a hope. Because I wasn't one of these guys. I have friends who are broadcasters who listen to themselves on tape recorders. I never did, because I never thought it would be a career for me. And I always thought that RTE, for instance, was for people from Dublin. So it just didn't, it wasn't on my agenda. Anyway, I suggested several names. None of them would do it. So he came back to me late on Saturday night. And I said, look, shall I go down and I do it? And it was only an embankment in Dunbeg. My crowd are passionate about their football. Maybe I got it from them more than anybody else. Anyway, they drove a tractor and trailer from our parish down the 7 or 8 miles down to Dunbeg and placed it on the embankment sideways, by the way. Put up sheets of galvanized because the county final, this was the last Sunday in October. And away I went. First match I ever did.
Yeah, and I never looked back. Give us a flavour of the book. I mean, it's not just, as I say, about your broadcasting career. It's about your life in general and your experiences and so forth.
Yeah, I suppose I wouldn't see it as a sports book. I think it is a book kind of on a spectrum of life, from growing up in New York to coming back to West Clare and living in rural Ireland, memories of my grandparents, changing careers. And obviously, I had 5 years I was knocking on the door of RTE, and I got 5 years of rejection. And so that was difficult, because I knew then, after a while from doing the videos, this is what I really wanted to do, because I wasn't too sure what I wanted to do as a teenager. I think it's very difficult at 16, 17. Because I changed courses in college from medicine to science, now ending up in broadcasting. So that all of that is there. And obviously, there's a good bit of G in it, but there's also Dancing with the Stars and a couple of stories behind that, Marty and Bernard, the boxing, the Olympics. I remember a very quick one with Katie Taylor and her father, when I was commentating on the radio and Jimmy McGee was beside me doing the TV. But the RT, when Katie Taylor won her gold medal, they wanted her on the TV that night. So I said it to Pete Taylor, and Pete said, no, we're going to the Irish House. This is a tradition by the Irish Olympic people, that they would name one location as the Irish House, wherever the Olympics are located, and they would have one night there for the Irish in that city and town. He said, we're going to the Irish House. And I said, well, can you not do this? And because they wanted the Taylors on with Bill O'Herlihy, the late Bill O'Herlihy, that night. So RT was really, there were all sorts of people ringing me. So I said, look, I'll try. So I went back in to the XL Arena, where she'd won her gold medal. Couldn't find Katie, couldn't find Pete, and found that they were doing the medical examination. And there was a... the only way, I knew if I got to Katie, I knew she would agree, because her father kept saying to me, no, we're going to the Irish House. Not possible to join Bill O'Herlihy. So anyway, this guy had left his white jacket and his coat tag, his little thing around your neck, on the chair. So I put on the white coat and the tag, and I went into the medical thing, which I shouldn't have been in there at all. And I got Katie. Katie agreed with me that they should do something with Bill O'Herlihy, and I got them on the TV that night. So little stories like that.
Absolutely.
That I hope people will enjoy.
I'm sure they will. Well, you know, people are well aware of your hurling and Gaelic games and Gaelic football and boxing commentaries. Less so of your beach volleyball experience. Is that in the book?
There's a touch off of it, to be honest with you. I think I mentioned it anyway. Yeah, beach volleyball we did in Beijing Olympics.
Yeah, and you commentated on the women's beach volleyball, wasn't that right?
I did. And then we did a little funny little piece about basically doing a James Bond-esque type of thing of the investigation of women's beach volleyball at the time. And it was just one of those funny little videos that you do.
Okay. Listener from Leitrim says, how could I ever question that Marty is not a national treasure? He's a great guy. So there you go.
Well, thank you. I hope people will enjoy it. Look, to me, I know I'm not a salesman in any shape or form, but I hope people will buy the book, read the book, and get a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
Because I think in these difficult times, you just need to smile a little bit more and to have a laugh. And what I'm getting from people who have read the book, that they are laughing out loud at the various stories.
Well, just on that, how do you get a laugh? What do you like to do, Marty, when you're not working? How do you relax?
Well, that's a good question. People, I think, are what I enjoy most. I love meeting people. I can barely send emails. I'm not a technical guy at all. Cut and paste, it took me a while to develop that. But it's meeting people, meeting friends. I love going cycling, particularly in West Clare. I won't cycle in Dublin. I think it's too dangerous for me anyway. But certainly down in West Clare, I like cycling. And I like visiting friends, whether they be in Donegal or Sligo or Wexford. I was down in Wexford last night and in Dungarvan. And it's people, because I think I was an only child of only children. No aunts, no uncles, no first cousins. So I think you develop a desire, even as a child, to have good friends. And I've been very lucky to have great friends. And friends have sustained me through life. So I suppose that's the greatest kick, and catching up with all of them and going away from the whole madness of the media.
All right. Well, you are in God's country, as we like to call it, tomorrow. A couple of book signings in the region in Sligo and Donegal. So where are you?
I'm going to Easton's tomorrow in O'Connell Street and Lieber, I'm not too sure the right pronunciation, in O'Connell Street in Sligo tomorrow. Mm-hmm. They're going to know it because they're going to hear it on your programme for the first time. But anyway, I'm sure they'll meet me and greet me there. I'm also going to Four Masters, and that's tomorrow morning in Sligo in O'Connell Street, Lieber and Easton's. Then I'm going to the Four Masters in Donegal Town, which is in the Diamond. I'm going to be there for 3 o'clock. And then I'm coming back to a novel idea, a lovely bookshop in Ballyshannon, where my good friend Barry O'Neill and colleague is from. And I'm going to spend a bit of time in Ballyshannon then. So I'm looking forward to this because I have genuinely great friends in Sligo and Donegal. And I hope that we might be able to meet tomorrow and have a cup of coffee.
Well, hopefully. And I know that's important to you. You, no matter where you're flying to or from matches, I know you always take time out to chat to people and to... I suppose it's part of the research, really, isn't it?
Well, you know, Niall, aren't we lucky to do what we do? Because I know you're hugely popular in Sligo and in Donegal, and you're in people's homes, and you're in their kitchen or you're in their car. And when I do my thing, I'm the same. And, like, that's a privilege I've always felt. So if they like what you do and they want to shake hands or say hello, isn't that lovely? Isn't that the greatest compliment? That you can get. So I have always appreciated that. So it's nice then to be out and about and meeting people.